This is Cyber Defense Radio with your host and cybersecurity expert, Gary Malefsky. Gary brings to you another globally recognized cybersecurity executive in the hot seat today.
Sitting in my hot seat today is a very special guest, very busy man. It's Mark Alvarado. He is the CISO of Academy Sports and Outdoors at Academy.com. It's a Fortune 500. There's billions in revenue. He's a busy man, so we're honored to have Mark in the hot seat today. Mark, welcome.
Thank you.
So being busy, you've got hiring woes that we're all experiencing in cybersecurity. We've got cybercrime rampant. Tell us what's going on the hiring side, and then let's get into cybercrime a little, if you don't mind.
Cyber professionals are at a high demand, and I think they get a premium. And because of that, keeping good qualified individuals is tough. When choosing people for my team, I don't always choose rock stars. I choose people who have a good cybersecurity aptitude and someone who's eager. I feel like that's a good way to build up your team and to impart the skills that you think that are important and necessary with a good professional. That being said, is once I get them trained up, then they become more valuable, and sometimes it's tough to keep them. So it's been a challenging time.
Yeah, on that note, you know, the current theme I'm hearing is hiring is tough in cyber, hundreds of thousands of job openings in the U.S. One conversation I had with a really sharp guy at Raytheon, actually, he suggested that we even look outside of our field and look for folks who might even be getting degrees in criminal justice, and maybe they'll make more money in cyber, and they love computers, but they also have that people skill and that track down the bad guys and stop the threats. It's just in the people space, you know, can we move them into cyberspace? Will that help kind of fill the gap?
I believe so. I think that the best cyber professionals are people who already have a curious mind, because I think that in cyber, it's almost like being a physical crime fighter. You notice the details. You notice when things are out of place. You notice when something deviates from the norm, and you follow the trails, you get curious, you stick with it. And I call it also gotta have courage, gotta have what I call professional courage, being able to give the bad news, being able to ask the questions, and be able to walk that fine line of being assertive without being offensive. Data is now the black gold and the most valuable thing on the planet. As people have learned that, companies and cyber criminals have learned that, that's what everyone's trying to steal. These cyber criminals are trying to steal your data, to either extort it, exploit it, corrupt it, it's your data. So knowing where your data is, knowing what to do with it, I think is critical. It's critical for your company being successful and making the right business decisions.
Yeah, on that note, cyber crime has far surpassed drug crime worldwide, and it's heading into more trillions, whereas drug crime is about $600 or $700 billion. So the criminals have definitely pivoted worldwide towards cybercrime over, you know, traditional forms of crime. They don't have to walk into banks anymore to try to rob them. And you've got one of the largest retail organizations in America, and you're probably attacked, I would assume, online all the time, and maybe even at, you know, the points of sale terminals and the Wi-Fi networks and other things. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, how you're dealing with cybercrime and any recommendations you might have for our viewers and listeners?
Yeah. So when it comes to cybercrime, the way that I see it is that there's a lot of different tools, a lot of algorithms, a lot of acronyms that you use to hear about it, and you can start chasing down everything. But what I think at first is, at the end of the day, they want my data, and they're going to want certain types of data, right? They don't just steal any type of data. There's certain types of data they're looking for. So I'm thinking wanting data, the data that gives away your competitive advantage, or data that's what I call critical data, whether it's PII, PCI, whichever industry you're in, knowing where that data is, containerizing that data, and focusing there. So for me, is I know that there's a bunch of data flowing all around the company, but if it's not my critical data, it's not where I'm necessarily going to focus. So data governance, knowing where that data is, managing it, protecting and utilizing that data is key in the beginning, because once you understand where that data is, then you're going to start asking for funding and that kind of thing, and start figuring out where you can containerize it, where you can quarantine and hold it, protect it, all those different things like that. So data governance is key, and that's what I do for me, is I want to know where my data lives at first. And once I know that if there's a terminal or a server or a workstation or something that's holding non-critical data, I'm not going to put that much focus on it because what do I care at that point? It's not data that's going to cause me to lose any sleep at nighttime because that data gets corrupted or stolen or something.
That's great advice. So focus, kind of like, you know, the signal to noise ratio in the SIEM, too many alerts, alarms, and they've deployed AI and machine learning to try to give us better intel and more pinpoint focus. And you're saying, which is great advice, focus on the data that really matters.
And for two reasons. One, data is the data that your cyber criminal may want to extort, or data that your customer data that you have some GRC obligations that you need with that too. That's another type of data.
And you're regulated, you deal with PCI, are there other regulations that you have to deal with?
We do. So with the various state, local, federal, and even international entities, they have different types of requirements. So generally it's PII, if you're GDPR, if you're doing business in the UK, and the United States, various states are having new data privacy and data protection laws that are coming in place. And because of that, knowing what their obligations are, for those to do business in those states. We operate in 17 states. We want to go border to border, coast to coast here in the US, but we know we also need to make sure that we can adhere to every state's data privacy and data protection laws.
That makes a lot of sense. And you know, we've talked about the challenge of really the hiring dilemma, but one of the challenges I think also is the budgetary issues that CISOs face every day, because our side of the fence is treated as a cost center. I'm wondering how you feel about that, because you stop a breach and you might save a company $1 million, $100 million, you know, brand damage, executives getting in trouble because, you know, there's issues related to the breach. I've seen it happen from Snapchat to other companies, you name it, where, you know, a breach happens and even there's been lawsuits, class action suits. Do the executives get it in retail, and how's it going on, you know, can we change people's minds that we're really not a cost center?
So yes, but I think that in order for the CISO to do that, he needs to understand two things. First of all, I think when you look at the evolution of the role, years ago, it was thought that someone who's a technologist or even a CIO, someone who understands technology or cybersecurity, or that's the person you want ideal in that role. And I think that in time, it's proven that not so much so, because if I'm a technology truist and I feel that certain algorithms or certain standards or protocols should be used, but that really causes pain to the business, all I'm going to do is find myself very frustrated. What I needed to do, and what I think all people in my role need to do, is have a good understanding of business. So having an MBA or someone who has a good thorough understanding of business, because at the end of the day, even though I may want a certain type of technology in place, if it breaks the bank here, they're never going to go for that. Because money is what's ultimately, whether you're a profit or a nonprofit, a for-profit or a nonprofit company, you still have to make money. And so for me, understanding what does my cyber program cost? If I'm asking them to spend more money than they're comfortable with, or that's allowed for that budget, they're never going to go with that program. So I have to be two things. I need to understand the business. I need to understand what's the overall business strategy. Where does my program fit in this? And then I understand the technology and all those things so I can go back out and find those. Because we've been around a long time. We've been around before modern computers. Academy's been in business more than 80 years. And any company that's been around before modern computers has a legacy system in that environment. And just like when I think of it in terms of a car, I got a grandfather who has an old, he loves his 1940s, 1950s cars. He's got like a 1959 Chevy. Tell him to get rid of that thing and he'll fight to tell you why. Why would I want to get rid of it? That truck runs. I can work on it. Plenty of room in the hood to change out the parts. It's very inexpensive. It gets me where I need to be. It still functions as a vehicle. Why do I need to get rid of it? I can give him all the logic in the world of why he should get this new latest electronic car with all these gadgets and everything else. He's going to say, I don't need it. All I need to go from A to B. I want to keep that car. And he would say he's right? Because the new car costs money. He can operate on that one. Just like with a business that has old antiquated equipment or operating systems or operational technology or machinery that provides a function, why are you going to get rid of it when it's going to break a lot of things? It's very expensive. It's providing a value and allowing the business to make money. So as in my role, I need to know how to put a compensating control in place to find a way to be understanding of what the business need is, but still meet my cyber program. And that requires a little bit more of an acumen, right? I need to understand business, I need to understand finance, I need to understand technology, I need to understand security. Also need a good amount of people skills to be able to walk the line back and forth to be able to speak to people on technical forum, to speak to people on the business forum, and ultimately win my financial argument. Sometimes I may need to, I'm going to win sometimes, sometimes I'm going to lose something, but I need to take my technical understanding and jargon in layman's terms or translate into a way to financial terms so I can speak the language of both parties to be successful in my program. And so that's where I think is the challenges role and why it may not be for everyone. And the people who step into these roles, if you're going to be successful, need to understand that. It's not important. It's not enough to be a cybersecurity professional or understanding. You need to also understand business. You need to be able to talk on both sides of that.
So a frictionless digital transformation and an understanding of cybersecurity that fits within the business model and the budgets, and getting, I'd say, the executives on the other side of the house to understand the value, critical value of defense against the latest threats, because they are evolving. The threats are changing and evolving every day from, you know, ransomware attacks, business email compromise, the list goes on and on. Are you deploying, and what do you think about zero trust?
I agree with it. I think that the reason why a lot of companies aren't full zero trust is because it's not that easy. I mean, if you have a company that started in the last 5 years and using all latest technology, it may be fairly easy to get to there. But any large enterprise organization that's been around, like I said before, modern computers, it's not that easy. They've got, I mean, there's a lot of companies, I'm embarrassingly so, I'm sure people won't admit this, but there's companies still running Windows 2003, XP, potentially Vista, Windows 7, Server 2008, all of these end-of-life type applications or operating systems. And they're not doing it because they want to. I'm sure they're doing it because there's a need for it at the time. There's a business need that that operating system is doing, or these old AIX type systems that are out of support, but they're performing good function and they can't get rid of them anytime soon. Maybe they've got 2 to 3 more years left, 4 or 5 more years in their environment. You still have to secure them. And you can't just say, I'm sorry, we can't patch it. We can't manage it. We still have an obligation. So understanding how that sits and what controls or compensating controls you can wrap around it to help the business with their need of having that obsolete equipment or application in their environment, but also still meeting your obligations from a GRC perspective or for just keeping the criminals out. It's not an easy job. This job is high stress. People always tell me, they say, God, you have a very stressful job. I have to speak on legal terms. I have to speak on in front of financial audit committees about certain things. I have to go speak to my technology team. I have to speak to my infrastructure team. And then I go meet with vendors and talk about those things. And then I go sit in board meetings and with others, the C-suite, to talk about all the other agendas they have on their items and then argue my point. And that is not an easy job.
I love your analogy on the 57 Chevy grandpa's car, because, you know, that's how the Carbon Hack breach happened. Good old Windows running in ATM machines in Russia, and they lost $1 billion to the hackers and their malware. So really, this digital transformation and getting executives to understand, it's stressful, it's challenging, but it is very rewarding, isn't it?
It is. I would say I find it rewarding, challenging yet rewarding, because at the end of the day, when you're able to complete that mission year after year, or I mean, I can't even tell you how many times we get attacked on a daily basis and how many times we defend those, successfully defend them. Feels good. It makes you feel like one is you're fighting worthy adversaries and two is you're winning. But unfortunately, because those attacks become millions a year, all it takes is one to lose. And people are asking, what have you done for me lately? Wow. Because I think cybersecurity is a thankless job. People expect me to keep all of those people out. And that's just my normal day. No one's giving me kudos for doing my job until that one guy gets in out of the millions because they attacked us all year long. Then they're asking, what were you doing? Why did you let that guy in? And like, how many times we successfully defended this company this year, and the one time some guy gets in, you're going to beat me up about it? It feels like a thankless job sometimes, but it's a very needed and very challenging and rewarding job.
It is, and it takes a great person like you to keep the lights on and make the ship continue to move, even if you have to plug leaks and patch systems and harden battleship, harden it like the steel on that 57 Chevy's hood. So, Mark, great interview. Really enjoyed it. Is there anything else you want to share with our viewers and listeners before we move on?
We talked about it earlier, but about the cost center, about IT traditionally being seen as a cost center. And I think that, no, it's not. I think that if that mindset shift and they see that we can also, I see this as a revenue generator. I'll give you an example back at Academy. We operate in 17 states, but we're going to go border to border, coast to coast. We're going to be the biggest and baddest sports and outdoor retailer out there. But in order to do that, we need to make sure that we can operate in all the data privacy, data protection laws of all the different states. So we currently don't meet California CCPA. So you can't buy our product in California. If you go to our website and you go to shop online, you can put everything in the cart and go to checkout. Once you put in the California address, the order gets canceled.
Wow.
So if we're able to meet that, we are now going to be able to, we'll be able to operate in California, which is a high outdoor activity state. There's a lot of beautiful things in California, the weather and the terrain and that kind of thing else. It could be a huge revenue generator for us. So if my cyber program is able to get all of that in line, and thinking we're going to be a revenue generator. So Nick, we're not a cost center. And also, if you ever decide to go international, GDPR, right? That's a pretty stringent regulatory requirement to meet. If we're able to meet that, then we can also sell international or in the UK. So we're a revenue generator, not a cost center. So I think that the mindset needs to shift to that, to see that IT can be a revenue generator. But in order to do that, we also need to make sure that we're securing it. So many people connect things to the internet now. It's getting worse and worse. There's really, in my mind, there's no reason for your refrigerator to talk to the internet or your faucet to talk to the internet. But we all do these things because they're cool or convenient, but it also comes with a certain amount of risk. So I think that people should also understand that it's cool if we go to these new innovative things and all this great technology, but it needs to be secured. Don't open up a door, a security door, if you don't have to.
Exactly. You know, at home, if we have an identity theft or a bank account issue, it's a big deal. We should take that same, you know, good personal hygiene to our corporate environment, especially with the work from home dilemma that's happening. I think you've given tremendous advice. I love the fact that Academy is coming to California, because IT is not a cost center, it's a profit center. And that is incredible news and information to share with others, because that's the nugget for others to bring to their boards. And I really want to thank you for this wonderful interview. And then folks, go to academy.com. If you're in the field or looking for a job in the field, Mark's hiring. Great CISO, keeping the lights on. And then come back next time for another exciting episode.
You've been listening to Cyber Defense Radio. Stay tuned next time for another amazing and informative episode. CyberDefenseRadio.com is proudly part of the Cyber Defense Media Group, where InfoSec knowledge is power.
Cyber Defense TV and Cyber Defense Radio have launched 24/7/365 live streams. Visit them online today at cyberdefense.tv and cyberdefense.radio. With your host and globally recognized cybersecurity expert and my good friend, Gary Milewski.